Good afternoon. The time is now 1:32, and I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We are in Belt Room 105 at the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful, rainy, and snowy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, January 26th, 2026. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Dunbar, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Gray Jackson has an excused absence today. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today, we have two items on our agenda. We have House Bill 78, Retirement Systems and Defined Benefit Option, as well as Senate Bill 170, Gaming Electronic Poll Tabs. But first, if you could please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in extending a warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderators, Susan Quigley and Kyla Tupo. You ready to go? First is House Bill 78, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option. This is our second hearing on the bill. Today it is my intention to have a brief recap of the bill, present a CS to the committee for consideration, take invited testimony, and set the bill aside for further consideration. With us for a brief recap, we have the Honorable Representative Chuck Kopp and his staff, Julia O'Connor. Thank you for joining us today at Senate Labor and Commerce. Please place yourselves on the record and begin your brief recap of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the committee. My name is Chuck Kopp, a House representative for District 10, and I am accompanied by my ABLE team member.
Julia O'Connor, staff to Representative Kopp.
Thank you, committee, for bringing us back up. So a brief recap, if the football games this weekend cause memory loss, is we are addressing three things in this bill. One is the bleeding of talent in our state, the personnel who lead and mentor and train. We just heard from the Department of Law just 30 minutes ago that their biggest challenge is they're not able to maintain their mid-level and senior managers. They have a employee turnover churn between 1 and 3 and 4 years, and then they have very senior personnel. So exactly what we're talking about is we have a hollowing out of our agencies. How do we hold on to those people? The second thing that we're bleeding is our money. We saw on Friday that the cost of what we're doing now is orders of magnitude higher than what this bill is proposing. And finally, we are not going back to an old legacy system, but we are providing a new modern retirement system that is affordable, that is predictable, and what the actuaries say is responsible to address the recruitment and retention challenges of our state. It's not about expanding pensions. It's simply about finishing the job responsibly. We are on track to pay off what we already owe by 2039 with our legacy systems and putting in place a new system that is affordable, predictable, and it's capable of remaining, of retaining the workforce that all of our communities depend on. So that's it in a very short recap, Mr. Chairman, and I'll take any committees. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Rep. Kopp. Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, members have a draft proposed CS in their packet. May I have a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for House Bill 78, version 34-Lima Sierra 0493/Gulf as the working document.
Object for purposes of discussion. My staff, Honorable Conrad Jackson, present the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The CS before the members, version /G as in golf, only has a couple of changes. The first being a title change, which adds an immediate effective date. The second change happens with section 38 on page 22, lines 3 through 9, and we're inserting a new section, this same or a very similar section is also inserted on page 51. The first section deals with the teacher's retirement system. The second deals with the public employee's retirement system. And in both cases, these changes will require that new hires under this new retirement plan, the new tier, are required to enter into this tier, the new defined benefits tier, and not have the option of going back into a defined contribution plan. Because there are two insertions of sections into the bill, the following sections were renumbered. We also have two conforming changes in sections 100 and 101. And that's the extent of the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Are there any questions for Mr. Jackson? Seeing and hearing none, I'll remove my objection. Is there a further objection? Seeing and hearing none, the committee substitute is before members as a working document. Representative Kopp has invited Mr. Dan Doonan to speak about this item to the committee. He is joining us via the Teams web. Mr. Doonan, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Most excellently. Thank you. And do we have, there we go. And are you sharing your screen for slides today, or do we have a separate slideshow for you? We have it.
Okay. Is that working?
It appears to be so.
Wonderful.
Please begin at your leisure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Vice Chair, and members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you today. I will be brief, as I'm certain you have a lot of business to attend to. If I do go too fast or don't fully explain something, I'm happy to take questions and clarify. So with that, I'll jump right in. I'm going to start with looking at the change in teacher turnover during the first 5 years after hire. And this information comes from your systems actuary, their experience study, and really wanted to go back and look how things have changed. So what you're seeing here, that 2009, the dark blue bars, is the estimate of turnover during the first 5 years of a worker being hired. Right. And in 2009, they said, well, we think we'll lose 18% of first year workers, 15 second year, and so on. Then in 2014, you come back, you do another experience study, and they found that more people were leaving than what they had anticipated. If you jump forward to 2024, another two experience studies later, what you're finding is that 30% of first year people were leaving. 25%, then 19 in years 2 and 3, and so on. And you might be thinking, well, were the actuaries wrong in 2014? And the reality is, no, they look at a census. They look at everybody in the system, how many people are quitting, how many are staying each year. What really I think the takeaway from this is that behavior itself has been changing. So I'm going to jump to looking at teacher turnover for more experienced workers. And once again, the dark blue bars are the expectation when the DC plans were very young and there wasn't a lot of track record. And my understanding was they assumed it would be about 10% higher turnover than the DB plan. Again, in 2014, the actuaries came back and said actually more people are leaving than what we anticipated. They pushed up those assumptions. And again, by 2024, you're seeing, you know, 8, 9, 10% of experienced workers at age 30, 40, and 50. That's the three sets of bars. Again, the way to read this is that the experience itself has been changing. You know, behavior doesn't change like a light switch when you change benefits and change plans. It's sort of more of a walk over time. I think awareness grows. Now, I will mention, I focus on teachers here, simply because of time limitations. We have looked at the PERS plan, public safety, general employees, and these trends are universal across the plans. One thing I would note on this chart, we also have the assumptions for the current DB plan. Today, about a quarter of your teachers are still in the legacy tier. So you're relying on them to do a lot of the teaching for Alaskans. And the turnover there is, you know, around 3-4%. So you have much lower turnover amongst workers who are working side by side, but in a different benefit plan. One of my quick comments about how I see this, and I think hopefully help you thinking about turnover. When you're losing a lot of employees, a higher percent of your workforce is going to be newer on the job. And newer employees are always more likely to quit. We saw that on the charts. You know, the first few years, between 30 and 13% of people were quitting in the first five, and then it goes down to about 9%. So when you have a lot of turnover, you have more people in those early years, you know, who are more likely to quit, and you have the higher rates themselves. And I think the third factor to think about is managers can essentially be less selective if they have no more spots to fill. If you have a school and they get 40 applications to be a teacher, if you need 10, you're hiring your top quarter preference. If you need 30, you might be taking all viable candidates. And I think that has an impact too, because we know when someone's a good fit and experienced and prepared for a job, they tend to stick and work out better. The last slide before we open up questions, losing experienced teachers is very unusual. What I have here, the first two bars are males and females, and this is essentially the 15th year of service. And this is based on your experience in the DC plan. You're losing, again, about 9% when you combine males and females there. The Alaska DB plan is the next two bars at 3.6, 3.9. So you're more experienced teachers, more likely to stay generally. And just to contrast some other states, Oklahoma teachers 4.6, Texas teachers 2.8. And you can see most of these states have less than 5% leaving the job each year once they're into that job for 14 years. Louisiana is a little over 5, Utah's 3 and 3.8 there. So this is pretty universal when you look at evaluation reports that retirement systems create. Early turnover tends to be a little high once people are in the job. And, you know, as I think you're aware, you know, Alaska sort of stands out in not offering a DB plan. And these data come from those DB valuations. So with that, happy to take questions or let you to your other business. Thanks.
Mr. Doonan, thank you very much for your presentation today. Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Is there any committee discussion on House Bill 78 before we set it aside? Hearing and seeing none, we'll set House Bill 78 aside, and we'll take a brief at ease while we set up for our next bill. We're back on the record now at 1:46 p.m. Next up on our agenda today is Senate Bill 170. This is our first hearing on this bill this year. Today it is my intention to hear a recap of the bill and present a committee substitute to members and then set the bill aside for further consideration. Once again, Mr. Jackson will be joining us to provide a brief recap of the bill. Welcome back, Mr. Jackson. Please put yourself on the record and begin your brief recap.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The bill before the members, Senate Bill 170, proposes to legalize electronic pull tabs in the state of Alaska. It's really not much more complicated than that. There are a few cleanup and minor changes also taking place in the bill. The purpose behind this is really dealing with something that we're seeing around the nation, around the world, inflation. The cost of a paper pull tab in years past has been a microscopic portion of the overall sales. That has changed. Prices have gone from a half a cent up to the number I believe I heard this morning was something like 4 to 7 cents. So a pretty drastic increase. All of this cuts into the profitability, the margins for all of the stakeholders, particularly the nonprofits. The goal with Senate Bill 170 is to bring the electronic pull tabs that are in play in a number of other states into Alaska in hopes of reducing those costs that the nonprofits are saddled with paper pull tabs. We're not intending or hoping that pull tabs, paper pull tabs go away. This would be a supplement to that. But because of the lower cost of electronic pull tabs, we're hoping that that puts a little more money back into the pockets, so to speak, the bank accounts of the nonprofits in the state of Alaska. And Mr. Chairman, I think members, we heard this bill a number of times this last year. I think members are pretty familiar with the general topic beyond that. So,
reckon so. Thank you very much for that brief recap. Are there any questions, though, for Mr. Jackson on this topic? Hearing and seeing none, members have a draft proposed committee substitute in their packet. May I have a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 170, version 34-Lima Sierra 0213/Tango as the working document.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just go through the summary of changes members have before them. The first change begins on page 2. Section 4 is inserted, a new section 4, which adds a reporting requirement on the annual reports that are given to the department, and that report will now require a reporting of the source and the monetary value of any marketing or promotional materials received from a distributor. Then, of course, following sections are renumbered. On page 8, the next change is on in section 20, and AS 0515-180E is amended to clarify that the top prize for a bingo session may not be more than $10,000, and the top prize may not be more than $2,500 for a bingo game. There's also a change to the total value of all door prizes, and that they may not exceed $40,000 per month or $480,000 per year. There is a slight drafting change, a drafting convention change, in paragraphs 1, 2, and 3 of Section 20. But that is just a drafting style, a drafting convention change. The next change in the bill in the CS is made on page 9, Section 25. And subsection G is amended to prohibit a manufacturer from providing or receiving gifts of any value. It also amends subsection J, I'm sorry, I, poor eyesight, to prohibit a manufacturer from distributing electronic pull tabs to a distributor if an ownership interest is in that distributor is held by the manufacturer. Following change is on page 12, section 26, and AS 0515-183A is further amended to prohibit the issuance of an electronic pull tab endorsement to a distributor's license should an ownership interest be held by a manufacturer, a parent or sister company, or subsidiary of a manufacturer. The next change you'll find on page 13, section 29, we make a few changes there. The term subsidiary is removed from subsection 8. Subsection 9 is amended, and that restricts the distribution of electronic pull tabs by a distributor from a manufacturer, is referenced in AS 0515-181I. We're also inserting a new paragraph, subsection 10, specifying a distributor may not distribute a pull tab game to a permittee or licensee that is owned or managed by a close relative of an owner or employee of the distributor. We're also amending J by adding a reporting requirement that all marketing or promotional materials provided under this subsection include the value and location where the items will be used or displayed. We're also amending subsection specifying a contract may not include an incentive or bonus, and there may not be a penalty based on the length of the contract. In section 32, page 15, you'll find the next change to AS 0515-186E, and that specifies that the ideal payout may not exceed 90%. The next change you'll find on page 17, section 37, that is in AS 0515-187J, to require that the designated person in charge must be on site and provide direct oversight of the gaming systems. We're further amending subsection K, changing the optional limits to tablets in play to a mandatory limit. And we're adding an alternative method of calculating the number of tablets that may be in play from the strictly just based on occupancy, one for every six persons permitted in the facility, to one person for every six or 10 tablets, whichever is greater. The next section, former paragraph N, is deleted, and then, of course, we're relettering those. Then we're removing the $250 cap from the new paragraph N. Basically, no gifts may be received. The next change is on page 18. Section 41, and we're amending three sections of AS 0515-188. First, in L, we're establishing a permittee payout to a vendor for electronic pull tabs may not be more than 25%. In Q, we are amending to require monthly payments by a vendor to a permittee be made not less than the 15th day of the month for the previous month's sales. That section in the previous bill was a weekly true-up. This is a monthly to alleviate some of the paperwork, some of the burden on vendors. There's further changes allowing a distributor to assist a vendor in the transfer of these payments, subject to department approval. And we're also granting the department authority to adopt appropriate regulations. And then T is amended again to remove that $250 gift cap, again meaning no gifts may be accepted. The next change is found on page 21, section 47, and 0515-690-40 is amended to expand the definition of a qualified organization. And in that, we add that a school-based booster club, which has been in existence for less than 3 years, if the club is supporting an activity which has been in existence for at least three years prior to the application. So we're eliminating that need to be an active club for 3 years before applying, as long as they're supporting that activity. The next change, all the next changes are found on the last page of the bill, page 52. In Section 51, there are conforming changes. Section 52 is a new transition section to permit adoption of regulations by the department. In Section 53, we add an immediate effective date for Section 52, and then 54 and 55 have conforming changes. That is the extent of the changes in the proposed CS, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first, I think a clarification for the public. On Section 20, when they talk about setting the limits to 40,000, 480,000, some folks in the public might be asking, well, why do they set them at all? But this is actually increasing the limits, doubling the limits, I think, from 20,000 to 40,000, 240 to 480. So, you know, insofar as we're taking account of inflation, and that's why those are in there, or that change is in there. My question is on the Section 4, amends require annual reports to the department include the source and monetary valuing of marketing or promotional material received from a distributor. Can you explain what that is and why we're interested in knowing sort of the promotional material received from a distributor?
Thank you. Senator Dunbar, through the chair, it ties back to the other sections you heard me speak of regarding the removal of a $250 cap on gifts. But we are eliminating the gift option, but marketing materials, promotional materials are still allowed. However, this section would require reporting of those marketing and promotional materials be included in the information provided to the department.
Can you clarify for me sort of who is receiving those materials? So they're coming from a distributor to?
To a vendor, permittee, a licensee.
Okay. And I guess why are we concerned about that? What does that matter for us, for the state? What's sort of the public's interest in that relationship?
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Through the chair, it goes back to the gifts. We're trying to make sure that everything is, I guess, similar to what we've done with the alcohol statutes. We're avoiding gifts. I hesitate to use some rather crass words for what someone might think of when they're giving gifts, but we want to make sure that anything of monetary value that's provided is tracked so that there's no less scrupulous activities going on.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Indeed.
So those less scrupulous activities, would they result in sort of monopolistic behavior? Or I'm still sort of understanding what our concern is with, you know, I mean, it might not be a good business decision if you've got distributors sort of giving gifts to vendors. But is the worry that one distributor will sort of be able to push other distributors out of the market by convincing those vendors only to take their product? Is that the concern?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I think that that's one way of looking at it, that there is a buying away into a distributorship, into a vendor, into a permittees place of business, just to eliminate any appearance of influence in getting a particular person's, a particular company's pull tabs into that location.
Okay.
Promotional materials, marketing materials, makes sense. That happens, it seems, to in most every business you find, including the alcohol industry. So there is some parallel here.
I may, as well, to that end, I think it's important to remember as we talk about limitations in this bill on vertical integration, limitations on gifts and other things, the reason why we want to have those limitations is so we can maximize competition amongst manufacturers and distributors so that we can also maximize profits for our charities and nonprofits. So if we were to have a system that allowed significant gifts, inducements, exclusivity, or other things that provided for market control for one brand of supplier or one sector of suppliers that then could drive costs up for those nonprofits and charities and then minimize their ability to raise money. So by having systems set in law that will maximize competition for those people and not allow one company to offer excessive gifts or not allow exclusivity or demand that nonprofits, vendors, whomever engage in only doing business with them, that means that prices could go up and then profits for charities and nonprofits could go down. This whole sector of charitable gaming exists to allow nonprofits and charities to raise money for things like kids sports and veterans organizations and all the things we like, right? This market does not exist to allow private companies to make money. That's not the goal. The goal of our state of Alaska allowing charitable gaming is to raise money for charities. And so I think it is called for that we have some pretty strict limits and guidelines as far as how companies that do make money to support those opportunities can operate. And so I think like that's really what I would say is the public interest on that.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for Mr. Jackson? Okay. Very well. Hearing and seeing no other questions, I will remove my objection. Is there a further objection? Hearing and seeing none, the committee substitute has been adopted. At this time, we will set Senate Bill 170 aside for further consideration by committee members and stakeholders. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again the day after tomorrow, Wednesday, when we will take up once again House Bill 78, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option, as well as Senate Bill 198, PERS, TERS, Retirement and Medical Eligibility. As though there is no further business come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today, we are adjourned at 2:04 p.m.